In Natchitoches, Michael quickly discerned a more pronounced American presence. Not far from the place where the Frenchman, Saint-Denis, had built Fort Saint-Jean-Baptiste a century earlier, American forces had established Fort Claiborne on two tall hills overlooking the river. Seeing so many soldiers made Michael uneasy at first, because of his experience with the Spanish. They aroused dark emotions in his subconscious, though he knew on a conscious level that these were fellow Americans. He had nothing to fear from them.
At least maybe we'll find somebody we can talk to. Sign of that store yonder has the name Smith on it. Another says Jackson. Used to be everything was French.
As Michael continued to observe the town, he realized the place was in no danger of turning fully American overnight. He could see signs that still bore names like Prudhomme and Moreau and Fontenot. Michael and Andrew had bathed, shaved, and washed out their clothes before they rode into town. The most logical course was to go directly to the Villeray house and inquire about Eli, he knew. But the closer he came to it, the more reluctant he felt. Marie was probably married now, with a house full of noisy children. She was probably fat or far removed from the idealized memory he had carried for so long. And why should he want to see her anyway? He had no intention of getting married, of domesticating like his Uncle Benjamin. That had not been Papa's way, though Papa had tried, and it would not be Michael's. Deferring the disappointment, he led Andrew through town and down to the river. They sat on their horses and watched a small steamboat forging against the reddish water's current, making its way to a landing where dry wood was stacked high, waiting to serve its brief and fiery destiny in the ship's boiler. Though they had paused on the Mississippi for a whole day and watched larger boats than these, the sights still aroused awe in the two young men from the Tennessee woods. A couple of flatboats drifted in the opposite direction, their pace slow and lazy, like the river.
They was built here.
Michael remembered what Eli had shown him.
That one yonder looks like it's stacked high with hides of some kind. They'll float all the way down to New Orleans and sell the hides and then rip the boat apart and sell the lumber.
Kind of like making a trip than eating your pack mule.
Michael looked back at their own pack mule, which had never displayed the servile attitude expected of a beast of burden.
That wouldn't be too bad an idea.
He's taking several bites out of us.
At a second landing, Michael saw another steamboat tied up, a crew of black workmen unloading its varied cargo. He touched the horse's belly with his heels and moved off in that direction for a closer look. The sorrel shied at the unaccustomed noise and activity. Michael dismounted and patted him on the neck. When Big Red quieted, Michael turned his attention back to the steamboat. The name painted on it was Beaver. He marveled at the engineering genius which could put such a complicated contraption together and then keep it running.
Ain't nothing like this in Tennessee.
Ain't no place in Tennessee to float it except the Mississippi.
I would assume you gentlemen have not made the acquaintance of a steamboat.
Turning, Michael faced a thin young man he would take to be just a little one side or the other, 30. He was obviously American from his speech and from the once nice but now travel-worn coat and breeches, and the tall beaver hat. He had striking eyes, large, brown, and intense.
No, sir. Where we come from, a boat like this would hang up in the shallows before it went 100 feet. We never even seen a raft till we got to the Mississippi.
By the look of you and your pack mule, I would judge that you have just arrived.
Michael was reticent about imparting too much information to strangers. But he sensed that there was no harm in this friendly young fellow, a natural gentleman by the look of him. Michael took him for a store clerk or a bank teller or a lawyer. He had none of the hard-handed, sunburned look of the farmer about him, and certainly none of the backwoodsman.
Yes, sir. We just now come in off the trace. We was about to set out looking for an old friend, named Eli Pleasant. By chance, would you know him?
No, I've just arrived here myself, on that boat.
The man extended his hand.
My name is Austin. Stephen Austin.
Michael accepted the handshake, instinctively drawn to the man on sight. Something in Austin's eyes told him that there was no guile here, no ulterior motive for his friendliness.
Michael Lewis. This here's my brother Andrew. We come down from Tennessee.
You plan to take up farming land, I would imagine?
Someplace. We ain't decided yet just where to turn our horses loose.
Austin gave the two men a moment's silent scrutiny.
I wondered, have you given Texas any thought?
Texas? Sure I have, but they shoot Americans there.
Not necessarily. I'm about to go to Texas myself. My father has the sanction of the Spanish authorities to settle 300 American families there. I'm on my way to work out the details. The Spanish want honest and industrious farmers. You look like farmers to me, am I correct?
Michael was hesitant in answering.
That's all we ever done, our whole lives.
And are you by chance family men?
We're both bachelors.
Do you have any prospects of marrying?
We didn't come here looking for wives. We came here looking for land.
According to the agreement my father worked out in Barb, families will receive larger land grants than bachelors. If you come across any likely young ladies, you might wish to give the matter some consideration.
Texas. Michael stared at the steamboat, but it seemed to dissolve before his eyes. He saw the Texas he had explored with his father and Eli and the others. The great open prairies, the deep green forests, the clear running streams. He felt a tingling from his head to his heels. To see it again.
Are you all right, Mr. Lewis?
Yeah, I was just remembering.
He was in Texas some years ago with Papa. They were catching wild horses to take back to Tennessee.
You've been to Texas before. Your experience might prove useful to me.
My experience wouldn't be useful for anybody. They killed my papa there. The soldiers did. Him and all the others except for me and Eli Pleasant.
I'm sorry I introduced such an unpleasant subject. I can imagine why you might never want to see Texas again.
It ain't that I wouldn't want to see it. I would. The place has stayed in my head all these years like some kind of ghost that never quits walking. Maybe if I did go back, I could put the whole notion to rest.
I'm supposed to meet an official Spanish delegation here and travel down to Bar with them.
Michael felt a sudden chill.
They got soldiers?
Possibly. I'm not sure. Perhaps you two would like to accompany me.
Andrew was about to speak up, and Michael knew from his apparent eagerness what he would say.
Not with soldiers. I don't think I could stand the company of Spanish soldiers after what they'd done.
I can understand. Well, should you change your mind before I leave, look me up. I'll not be difficult to find. It was a pleasure to become acquainted.
Austin walked up the gangplank and onto the boat. Michael watched him, paralyzed.
Michael, you don't look like you feel none too good.
It was the things he said about going to Texas, about us maybe going with him. Now that we've come this far, it don't seem quite real.
Looks real enough to me. And I know it's been on your mind for the last whole 5 years.
It has, but it's been more like a dream than something actual. It's been like ghosts walking through my head, waking me up in the middle of the night. Ghosts of Papa and them, all that shooting, all that blood.
I've heard you sometimes. Seems to me like the way to drive away ghosts is to rush them head on.
But soldiers, I don't want nothing to do with soldiers. We ain't getting it done standing here watching other people work. Let's go down to old Baptiste Villeray's store and see if he can't tell us something about Eli.
Time had been good to Villeray, Michael thought. The store had been enlarged since his last time here. The growing settlement of the country was bringing a booming business up the Red River from New Orleans. He and Andrew had passed warehouses from which emanated the odor of skins. Baled remnants of last year's cotton crop stood awaiting shipment downriver to market. Little feathers of dirty white lint fluttering the breeze that came up from the river. Trade goods from other parts of the world were moving up and down the street by dray cart and wagon.
Looks like we come to a lively town.
I guess this is the stepping-off place to God knows where all. There's a lot of country out yonder, and somewhere there's a place for us in it. Maybe like Austin said, that place is Texas.
Michael took a long look at Villeray's place of business.
I just hope old Eli is still among the living.
Michael recognized Villeray on sight. The man looked the same as the last time, perhaps a few pounds rounder about the middle, as befitted a busy merchant in a growing town. Villeray obviously did not know him, however. He approached the brothers with a smile.
And my good friends, how may I serve you today?
Michael couldn't help smiling in return, remembering the kindness and generosity of the old man and his family.
You've already helped me, Mr. Villeray. Was it not for you, I'd probably not be alive today. Look close and see if you remember.
Villeray turned his head a little to one side, concentrating with his left eye. Michael suspected the other was weakening.
The face. I know the face. Ha! You are the boy Michael! That is it! The boy Michael from Tennessee, ha ha, but a boy no longer, ha ha ha.
He grabbed Michael's hand and pumped it vigorously, then threw his arms around him. Michael was not quite prepared for such a show of emotion. He half expected Villeray to kiss him. French had a reputation for that. But Villeray stopped short of so extreme a display.
We had not heard from you. We were afraid you might have died.
No, sir, not hardly.
Villeray stepped back for another study.
Mr. Villeray, let me introduce my brother, Andrew.
Another Luis. He was a good man, your father. I'm sure you are a good man, too.
Michael wanted to ask about Marie, but he didn't want to be obvious.
How's your family? Ms. Villeray and them?
All fine, all fine. You will go home with me for supper. They will all be glad to see you, especially one...
Marie? She's still at home?
That was a way of asking if she were married without being too blunt.
Where else would she be? A respectable young woman, not yet with Osbond?
Michael knew the relief showed in his face. He knew by Villeray's widening smile that the old man saw it.
Mama has introduced her to many young men, but she seems not in a hurry to leave us. She will be very happy to see you, I think.
A knowing grin spread across Andrew's face.
An old woman who just helped take care of you, huh?
Michael felt his face redden. He was defenseless against Andrew's humor. He decided it was time they got down to cases.
Mr. Villeray, we was hoping maybe you could tell us something about Eli Pleasant. Is he anywhere around this country?
Villeray's smile lost some of its warmth.
Has anyone said anything to you about Eli?
No. Is he dead or something?
He's much alive. There are certain authorities who probably wish you were otherwise.
He in trouble?
All his life, Eli Pleasant has been in trouble. But no more now than before. We all transgress against the law a little when we feel the law is not just. Eli's transgressions are a bit more open than some. He moves things from the Spanish side to the American side and in the other direction as well. He does not bother with regulations.
He's a smuggler, then.
The deeds are not so bad as the name. We're all smugglers here, if one wishes to read the fine detail of the law. But the laws were written thousands of miles away by people who know nothing of the realities. We live with realities.
Is Eli hiding out?
There is no need. Some of the Spanish officials would gladly shoot him on sight if they could catch him. But here, he comes and goes freely. Nakitoshi officials look the other way. They, too, live with realities.
We'd sure admire to see him, if you could point us the way.
The smile returned in all its glory.
If you would simply turn around.
Michael turned. Striding toward him between the barrels and bales came the old man whose face had been burned into his memory. The man who had carried him back out through the gates of hell.
Eli!
Eh?
The beard was a bit grayer, but no better kept. Otherwise, Michael saw no change. Eli was one of those men who seemed to age only to a point and then remain forever the same. Eli squinted, recognition evading him. When it came, he rushed forward and threw his arms around Michael, his forward momentum driving Michael backward. Michael would have fallen had he not bumped hard against a large wooden crate. Eli stepped back for a second look.
Boy, you're the image of your old daddy, I swear you are.
Eli paused, turning to give the same close study to Andrew.
And you're one of the Lewis boys, too. Your old daddy's stamp is mighty strong.
I'm Andrew.
I never thought to see you boys again on this earth. What brings you so far?
Michael and Andrew glanced at one another.
Come a time we had to set out and find a place for ourselves. We was hoping you might have some good notions.
Eli seemed pleased that his advice was considered to have merit.
Now, we'll do some thinking on that, we sure will. You boys go with me out to my place on the river. We'll look at some country. There's a plenty to look at.
But it is too far to go tonight. You will come home and have supper with my family, all of you. Time enough tomorrow for you to let this old heathen take you out to his lair.
Villeray lived near enough to his store that he customarily walked rather than ride a horse or take a carriage. Michael, Andrew, and Eli led their horses and walked beside him. Michael noticed as they went along that men tipped their hats and women curtsied to Villeray. He was obviously a man of substance and respect. He remembered that his father had always said it was easy for a man to put on a false face and fool strangers, but he could not long fool his neighbors, for they came to know all sides of his nature.
I must let Guadalupe Lucero know that you have come, Michael. He occasionally asks if we have heard anything of you.
Michael only vaguely remembered Lucero. He recalled that the man was a Spaniard, a fugitive from the authorities in Spanish Texas.
Why would he be interested in me?
Your enemies are his enemies. They have killed many of his people, just as they have killed some of yours.
Well, I doubt he's in town. He was by my place a day or two ago. Didn't say if he was on his way into Texas or on his way out. I didn't feel like I ought to ask him.
There are still troubled times on the other side of the Sabine. There is revolution afoot.
There's been revolution afoot down there for a dozen years. All it's come to has been a heap of killing.
And there will be more. It's not a good place to be in these times.
Michael remembered the young man he and Andrew had met at the dock.
There's a fella named Austin going down to Texas to see about settling some American families.
So I've heard. I fear he will not have a happy time.
He asked us if we'd like to go with him.
My advice is probably worth only what it costs you, which is nothing. But in your place, I would think a long time. Texas is not a healthy place for an American.
Villaray glanced at Eli.
Especially for one who's constantly in and out of it, like the wind in the night.
I've got friends. Take care of me.
But it's big and wide open, got very few people. It's got worlds of room to grow.
And worlds of room for a man to die in.
They rounded a corner and Michael could see the Villaray house ahead. Its high-pitched roof, its long, deep gallery, just as he remembered them. And on the gallery, he saw two women standing. One was Mrs. Villaray. The other, Marie, hurried down the steps and out into the street.
Marie! Marie, no! A lady waits!
Marie Villaray did not wait.
Michael!
She rushed toward Michael, her wide skirts flaring. Michael's sorrel horse took fright and jerked the reins from his hand. Michael made no effort at retrieval. He strode forward, almost in a run, to meet Marie. They rushed together in the middle of the street. Wildly, she threw her arms around him, and unashamedly, she kissed him on the mouth, almost smothering him with her joy.
Oh, Michael, I knew someday you would come.
Andrew caught Big Red and stood grinning.
Prettiest old woman I ever saw.
Through supper, Michael couldn't escape the apprehension in Mrs. Villaray's eyes as she gazed at him across the table. He tried not to look at her, concentrating his attention upon Marie. She sat opposite him, where he had an unobstructed view, without having to turn his head. He suspected Marie had arranged the seating that way. Hungry, he gorged himself on the kitchen-cooked food he had missed during the weeks on the trail. He felt a little ashamed of his gluttony, but not enough to keep him from refilling his plate twice. Marie ate little. Every time he lifted his gaze to her face, he found her staring at him with eyes dark and warm and wonderfully alive. Eyes a man could tumble into and just keep falling. Baptiste and Eli had many questions, but Michael held silent and let Andrew provide most of the answers. He would have sounded like a babbling idiot anyway, he thought, with his mind on Marie instead of the conversation. She had blossomed to full flower during the years since he'd last seen her, somewhat like his sister Heather, except that there was little about Marie's features which resembled Heather's. Marie's eyes were black, where Heather's were blue. Her skin was smooth and olive, where Heather's was fair, and given to blistering in the sun if she failed to wear her bonnet. Marie was a bit more slender than Heather. He had a notion that a man could almost reach around her waist with his two hands and touch fingers. The thought of doing so brought him a fleeting pleasure, then uneasiness. The way her eyes sparkled, he suspected she might somehow be reading his mind. Halfway through supper, he felt something nudge his foot. He first thought one of the family dogs had sneaked beneath the table, but Marie smiled, and he realized she was rubbing her toes against his boot. The sensation was erotic, for a moment bringing up a discomforting memory of Sally Boone. Warmth rushed to his cheeks. Laughter danced in Marie's dark eyes. He wondered if she realized the extent of the effect she was having on him. He glanced about apprehensively, fearing someone might have noticed. No one showed any sign, so he answered Marie's gesture by rubbing his foot against hers. He thought her face flushed a little, but perhaps he was misled by her smile that lighted the room like a dozen candles.
Cena es más.
When everyone finished supper, Mrs. Villeray stood up and began issuing orders to her children. Michael sensed that she was instructing them to clear the table and put away the food, what little the hungry visitors had left, for another meal. Marie began stacking plates. Baptiste Villeray stopped her.
Marie, the others can do this. You have a guest. Why do you not take him out onto the gallery?
Mrs. Villeray gave her husband and her daughter that same anxious look Michael had seen before.
Una dama se supone que esperar, querido marido.
Marie glanced provocatively at Michael. She took his hand and led him out the front door. She seated herself on a wooden bench and patted the place beside her. Michael hesitated.
I got a strong idea your mother ain't a bit keen on me coming back.
Do not worry about Mama. It was Papa who sent us out here. Papa is French and a romantic. Sit down.
Michael sat beside her, leaving the space of two hands between them. She inched up against him. The image of Sally Boone intruded again.
Ain't you afraid your neighbors will gossip?
On the front porch it is all right to sit. It is our way. If we sat where we could not be seen, then they would have something to whisper.
Michael was not sure he followed her logic, but he accepted it. He puzzled about one thing.
Last time I was here, we couldn't talk to one another much. I didn't speak French and you didn't speak American. Now you talk a pert near as good as I do.
I have worked hard to learn the English. I have always known you would come back.
You've done real good.
What matters is to understand. I hope you understand me, Michael Lewis. In all the time, I do not forget you. I see other men and I compare, and always it is you. Sometimes I close my eyes and I think very hard. And I believe you are thinking of me, too. It is like we are talking, though we are many miles apart. Does that seem silly to you, Michael?
I never did come up with such a notion, but I wish I had.
You have thought of me, Michael?
Sure I did, many a time. Can't remember what you looked like, wondering if you changed.
And have I changed?
A heap. I kept remembering a girl, 14, 15 years old, but look at you now, a grown woman.
Marie slipped her hand into his.
Do you know what a grown woman thinks about Michael?
I've got no idea.
The same thing a grown man thinks about.
The invitation was overpowering. He leaned to kiss her, thinking the neighbors be damned. But Mrs. Villeray stepped out onto the porch, and he pulled back in frustration. Marie's mother gave them a moment's suspicious glance, and then walked to a chair at the far end of the gallery and sat, cooling herself with a folding black Spanish fan. She had appointed herself chaperone. Marie squeezed Michael's hand again before she released it and placed both hands properly in her lap.
Mama is Spanish. She does not remember how it is when people are young.
Maybe she does remember.
Michael had a guilty feeling that it might be a good thing the old lady showed up when she did. He was beginning to have some Sally Boone notions. They were not appropriate, not with this girl.
Now that you are here, what will you do?
Look around the country, see if we can find a place that me and Andrew could settle on. We're fixing to go with Eli in the morning. He knows some places to take us.
Eli takes many risks. He is an old man, and he has not so much to lose. You are a young man. You would have much to lose.
Marie leaned against him, and the warmth of her body led him to ease one arm around her slim waist. He stole a glance at Mrs. Villeray. Her fan was working more rapidly, but she held her place. If he went any further, she would put a stop to it.
When you find your land, you will build a house on it?
Andrew admires looking up at a roof come nighttime. Me, I ain't that particular.
You will have everything you need in the house. Table, chairs, bed, a fireplace.
A house has to have all them things.
A house needs more, Michael. It needs a woman.
Michael sensed the direction she was trying to carry the conversation. He felt a sudden caution.
Are you asking?
That is for the man to do. But I was hoping you would.
Marie, if I was in a marrying frame of mind, you'd be the one I'd ask. But I don't know how I can explain this to you. Papa was always of a restless and solitary nature. Never could stay in one place. He was always off in the woods or going out to hunt new country. Half the time, my mother never had any idea where he was at. Papa tried, but it wasn't in him to be what he ought to have been to her. The hard truth is, he ought never to have gotten married. He was a good man, but he just wasn't meant for a husband. He couldn't stay in one place the way she needed him to, and I'm afraid I'm too much like him. I wouldn't want to put a woman through the miserable times my mother had, not knowing when Pop had ever come home, or if he'd come home. Afraid he'd die a long ways off and she'd never see him again. When he finally did, she died a little too. I wouldn't want that for you.
Marie took his hand in hers and pressed it firmly against her waist, out of Mrs. Villeray's sight.
But your mother never stopped loving you.
Michael remembered that his mother had leaned upon his Uncle Benjamin for support at times, but he could honestly agree with Marie.
No, she never did.
Then that is your answer, Michael. If a woman loved you, she would love you no matter where you lived and how you lived. And if at times you had to travel alone, she would want to make a home that you could always come back to. If you tried to take from her the right to love you, would you make her happy?
I just wouldn't want to make you, her, unhappy.
Marie's fingers tightened on his hand.
You could never make me unhappy, Michael. So go this time. Go with Eli Pleasant. Find your land, build your house. One day, you will come back looking for me. However long that may be, I will be waiting.
Turning, Marie put her arms around him, forcefully pulled him against her, and kissed him with a ferocity that took him by surprise. Heat rolled over Michael like a blaze in a newly lighted fireplace. Marie stood and faced him, holding onto his hands. He saw fire in her black eyes.
There, Michael Lewis. Forget that, if you can. Forget me, if you can.
Marie walked down the gallery toward her dismayed mother, then entered the house without looking back. Michael raised one hand to his tingling lips. He would not forget. Not if he traveled 10,000 miles. Eli Pleasant had never been one to let the rising sun shine on his sleeping face. He and Michael and Andrew were on the trail by good daylight, leading the recalcitrant pack mule Jethro, which had come over the trace from Tennessee, as well as several of Eli's. Except for a few supplies, which Eli needed to restock his cabin, his pack mules carried no load. Eli hinted that they had come to Natchitoches heavily laden with goods traded from Indians on the Texas side of the river. Neither Spanish nor American authorities had taxed them, for the tax collectors went home at night. That was Eli's favorite time for traveling when his mules carried a load.
Cooler, easier on the stock.
They rode through well-developed countryside at first, past plantations which sprawled across huge expanses of red soil, past small farmsteads which supported perhaps one family.
It's a rich country if one's taste runs in that direction. Me, I like it better when I don't hear my neighbor's axe ring of a morning and where the soldiers don't hardly ever come. I get fidgety when I feel somebody looking over my shoulder.
Michael nodded, for he understood. A little bit of company went a long way. He had been glad enough to leave Natchitoches, except for one regret which haunted him every mile. That was the goodbye he had spoken to Marie Villeray. She had challenged him to forget her kiss. It would be useless to try. He entertained himself with remembering how it had been, and his memories would expand to include Sally Boone. Except that in a little while, it was not Sally's face he saw, or whose body he touched in his mind. It was Marie's. He felt a little guilty. Where he came from, a man could get killed for such thoughts if they became known. He had no intention of telling anyone, but some of it must have shown.
I couldn't have gone off and left that girl so easy if it was me.
It isn't you.
I wish it was. If you don't want her, how about giving her to me?
You wouldn't know what to do with a girl if you had one.
I was always a willing learner.
Sometimes you are a vexation and a pain.
Now this is where the neutral strip starts.
The what?
It taken the Spanish and American governments a long time to agree where the boundary line is between Texas and Louisiana. So they set up a neutral strip from the Sabine east about halfway to Natchitoches, where neither side was supposed to settle or to send their soldiers. It pretty soon got to be an outlaw country, and it still is. People settle here now, and some rough old boys have made yourselves a home in here. If you're looking for somebody that don't want to be found, chances are he's in the strip someplace. Ain't much law except what a man carries on him. Get in trouble, and there ain't no officers coming to help you out.
You live here, don't you?
Well, the wild ones take me as one of them. You'll see a white locust tree at my place, with Spanish daggers planted on both sides of it. That's a sign that I won't bother the boys, they won't bother me. I don't see nothing, I don't tell nothing. If the governments could get together like the people in the strip, there wouldn't be no more war. Not much, anyway.
They came late in the day to a cabin just short of the river.
Well, it ain't too much for pretty, but the roof is sound. I built her far enough up from the flood line that I don't get chased out of bed by high water. Man gets to be my age, he needs a rest.
It was a single-room cabin built of logs in the most rudimentary style, with a small porch but no dog run. Living alone, Eli didn't need much space. Michael thought the small barn and a lean-to shed out at the horse pens looked more solid than the cabin. Eli was a man who took care of his animals.
Had me a woman out here for a while, widder from Natchitoches. French woman she was, hard to satisfy. Kept complaining about the cabin. Said I either had to build her a better one or take her back to town. And the longer I studied on it, the less I could see wrong with the cabin, the more I could see wrong with her. So I taken her back to town. She's already hounded one man to death. I wasn't fixing to let her do it to me.
As Eli had said, a white locust tree stood in front of the cabin, a dagger planted on either side. Farther back, Michael had noticed a couple of other places featuring the same display, but he had thought little of it at the time. This, he decided, was self-government in a most elementary form. They unsaddled their horses and unpacked the mule Jethro. Eli had a field of corn and some tobacco. Michael thought both needed more tending than they had received. He suspected they were only a secondary consideration. Eli's real interests were commercial. He walked out past the cabin to the slope that slanted down toward the Sabine River. Michael's nerves tingled as he stared at the water, then lifted his gaze to the line of trees and spots of open prairie he could see on the other side.
Texas.
He found himself trembling. Old images surged back like a river in flood. His eyes misted. He remembered the other time he had come from Louisiana to this river and had waited impatiently while his father and Eli scouted the western side for danger.
Papa.
Michael wished he could bring back the day, wished they had found danger and had turned around in time. Things might have ended differently, but probably not. Mordecai might have delayed his plans, but he would never have given them up. It had always been his way to go ahead with whatever he intended to do, no matter the odds. The eventual outcome would likely have been the same. He stared across the river at Texas, Mordecai's golden land, Mordecai's dream. He was not sure whether it attracted or repelled him. Sometimes the line between the two emotions was thin. Eli and Andrew joined him. Eli seemed to read his mind.
Don't dwell on it, Michael. It don't change anything.
You spend a lot of time over yonder, don't you?
Enough. I got friends there. Spanish, Indians. We do a right smarter trading.
It'd cost your neck if you get caught, wouldn't it?
It's an old neck. Anyway, them soldiers ain't fixing to catch me. Wherever they move, the word goes out ahead of them.
How?
Well, people watch where they go and spread the alarm. And often they know ahead of time because not everybody in the army likes what's happening.
You mean soldiers themselves let the word out?
They ain't all bloodthirsty. There's a goodly scattering of decent men amongst them. Remember that sergeant that was ordered to shoot you and didn't?
I'll remember his face till they put me in the ground.
Well, he does what he can to spoil Rodriguez's digestion.
Rodriguez. That's another face I'll carry with me to the grave.
He's still around. Cachupin, the people call him, because he's a pure-blood Spaniard. It's a wonder the mixed-blood mestizos ain't killed him. Too afraid of him, I reckon. He's killed a good many of them in the name of a king. Killed his share of Americans, too.
The officer's face had been burned into Michael's brain, a face he would recognize in the darkest corner of hell.
You ever seen him?
From a distance. If it had been close, I wouldn't be here.
There ain't been a day or night that I ain't seen him. I wake up in a cold sweat seeing him.
Michael kept staring at the river.
Next trip you making to Texas, did you take us with you?
Ain't you had enough of that place?
I hate it because of what happened there, but I've always known I had to go back to it someday. Maybe go find the place where it happened, where Papa's buried. Maybe that's what it'll take to clear my mind of it all.
It might just make things worse. Seeing the place again might set more devils loose than you already got.
I'm ready to take that chance.
Andrew was staring with interest toward the river. He raised his hand and pointed.
Seems like some of Texas is coming to us. Look yonder.
The afternoon sun hit Michael in the eyes. He lowered his chin so his hat brim would shade them. He made out three horsebackers swimming toward them from the western bank.
Friends of yours, Eli?
Eli held one hand over his eyes.
One of them, maybe. Looks like Guadalupe Lucero. The other two...
Something's the matter. One man looks like he's been tied to the saddle. The other two are helping him.
Eli struck a brisk trot that belied the gray in his hair. It was all Michael and Andrew could do to keep up with it. The riders came up out of the water before the three men on foot were able to reach the bank. One leaned over his horse's neck. He would have fallen if a rope had not held him in the saddle. One of the other men pushed quickly to his side and tried to set him aright. Andrew ran forward to help. Michael held back. He recognized a Spanish uniform, or what was left of one. An old bitterness suddenly welled up.
Damn him, he's a Spanish soldier.
The other two riders dismounted to let their horses breathe easier. One looked apprehensively back across the river.
El Diablo Rodriguez, que no sigue.
Who's coming?
Eli could speak Spanish almost as well as a native, but he used English with Lucero.
Rodriguez!
That Rodriguez?
That Rodriguez.
Eli asked some questions in Spanish, then hurried to the side of the horseman, slumped in the saddle. His eyes were grave.
Come here, Michael. I want you to look at this man.
It was a struggle for Michael, because the uniform stirred a remembered hatred. But he went to Eli's side. The man raised his head. Recognition struck Michael like a blow on the chin. This was the sergeant who had saved his life. What was his name? Sargosa? No, Zaragoza, that was it.
It's him. What's happened to him?
He's in about the same shape you was the time you came back across the river. Want to guess who shot him?
Rodriguez.
Zaragoza tried to help just one poor bastard too many and got caught at it. Come on, we better get him up to the house and see what we can do for him.
Michael did not move. He kept looking across the river.
What about Rodriguez?
He's on the trail. Been trying to catch him all the way up from the bar. But this is American territory. All he can do is stop over yonder and cuss till he turns blue.
Eli went on toward the cabin with the men who had just crossed. The two riders held Zaragoza in the saddle. Michael stayed behind, watching the far bank, wondering if Rodriguez was really going to come. Andrew started after Eli, then turned back.
Ain't you coming, Michael?
That man, Rodriguez, he's the one who murdered Papa.
You couldn't shoot him from here. The range is too far.
I could go over yonder and wait for him.
Come on, Michael. You're talking crazy.
Maybe you wouldn't think so if you'd been there, if you'd seen.
I didn't come all this way just to watch you get yourself killed in Texas like Papa did.
Andrew tugged on Michael's arm.
Come on!
Reluctantly, Michael went with him, pausing a couple of times and looked back. He saw no sign of activity on the opposite bank.
But what I'd give...
The two Spaniards carefully helped Sergeant Zaragoza down from the saddle. The river's water had not washed away all of the bloodstain high on the sleeve of his shirt. The shirt was partially shredded, evidence of flight through clutching timber. The man's bewhiskered face was pale from shock, almost gray. His dark eyes touched upon Michael, but seemed to have trouble focusing. Even with the whiskers, the drawn features, and the dulled eyes, Michael did not doubt his identity.
We've got to get the bullet out of him.
Lucero had learned a lot of English in the years since Michael had last seen him.
The bullet is out, but the wound is fevered.
He nodded toward a bench at the side of the cabin in the afternoon sunshine and out of the breeze. Lucero and the other Spaniard supported him as he made his way there. Zaragoza sank wearily upon the bench, but managed to hold himself in a half-upright position.
He'd better off inside on a bed.
Zaragoza understood and shook his head.
The sunshine, it gives warmth and strength.
Eli looked dubious, but accepted Zaragoza's judgment.
How'd he come to get in this shape?
Lucero nodded toward the other Spaniard.
This is the brother of Zaragoza's wife. He is from far south, from Bar. His name is Nicolas Galindo.
Galindo was a tall, slender young man with animated black eyes. He did not seem to know English.
Galindo works much for the rebellion. He makes many speeches. Too many speeches. Rodriguez decides it's time to shoot him. Zaragoza goes to make warning, and Rodriguez catches them together. It has been a long chase from Bar. Some of my people helped him.
Eli gave Zaragoza a long, approving study.
Well, you're safe now, if the wound don't get worse.
Eli leaned over the sergeant.
I got somebody I want you to see. Michael, come over here.
Michael no longer saw the uniform. He stared in admiration at the man who had spared his life a long time ago. By all accounts, Zaragoza had spared many others as well. The risk he had run was evidenced by the fact that he was here now, wounded.
You remember this young feller?
Zaragoza seemed, after some effort, to bring Michael into focus.
Oh, I think I do not.
A bunch of us was gathering up wild horses. Your soldiers shot everybody. Rodriguez told you to finish me off, but you let me live.
You are that boy?
Zaragoza blinked away a starting of tears, for they were unbecoming a soldier.
You were much hurt. I feared you would die.
I would have, if it hadn't been for you and Eli.
It shamed me much to leave you. But there was a man with you, an Americano.
Cyrus Blackwood. He ran off and left me. Never did have the guts of a grub worm.
Andrew had been standing at the edge of the slope watching the river. He pointed and came running.
There's soldiers on the other side. Looks like they're fixing to swim across.
They can't do that. Law says they dash and come over.
Zaragoza pushed himself to a shaky stand, bracing with one hand pressed against the cabin.
A gun. A gun, please. I do not die without a fight.
Michael's heartbeat quickened. He fetched his rifle where he had leaned it against the log structure.
Y'all give me the first shot at Rodriguez.
Eli Pleasant had regained his composure.
Better nobody shoots unless it's a case of having to. I count 10 men, all we got is 6. And the sergeant ain't in no shape to do much, even if he had a gun.
Rodriguez has no right here. This is the United States. He has no right.
He's got 10 guns. With that kind of advantage, he don't need no rights.
I say we kill Rodriguez and the rest will turn back.
Think so? One shot and all of us will die. You think killing Rodriguez is worth that much?
Michael was about to say it was worth any price, but he looked at Andrew and Eli, then at the Spaniards, and he was forced to back away. Eli's logic calmed him a little.
I don't think even 10 men will relish looking into 5 loaded rifles. They'll worry about which 5 dies.
Zaragoza was unable to stand long. He sank back onto the bench.
A gun. Bring me a gun.
I'm sorry, but we ain't got enough. You just stay where you're at. We ain't fixing to let him have you.
Eli cut his gaze back to Michael.
You let me do the talking. Don't shoot unless you have to. And if you have to, you make it good. Kill the son of a bitch.
Not even a stranger could mistake Rodriguez's importance. He rode at the head of the detail. Even trail weary, he had observed an officer's proprieties. He had shaved, probably that very morning. His uniform was the most colorful, despite the wrinkling and the dirt of a grueling pursuit.
Rodeon!
His men quickly formed a semicircle to cover the 5 who waited at the log cabin, 6 counting the unarmed Zaragoza. Michael's hand went sweaty on his rifle. Hatred welled up like heat from a forge as he stared into the face that had haunted him in so many awful dreams. There was no mistaking the cruel eyes, the lips pulled back against white teeth. It took all the resolve he could muster not to raise the muzzle and squeeze the trigger to blast that hated face into oblivion. Rodriguez looked fiercely at the armed men who faced him. If some inner uncertainty made him feel like flinching, he did not allow it to show.
Who is in charge here? This is my place.
Rodriguez studied Eli a moment, perhaps trying to remember if he'd ever encountered this old scoundrel. He nodded first toward Galindo, then at Zaragoza, who leaned heavily against the cabin's log wall.
You harbor 2 fugitives. I want them.
Eli stood solid as a fence post, rifle firmly clenched in both hands.
This is the United States of America. Maybe you didn't notice that you just crossed the Sabine.
I saw no river. I see only the fugitives. You will give them to me.
If American soldiers was to come along and find you on this side, you'd be in one hell of a mess.
What soldiers? I see no soldiers. I see no river. So far as I know, this is still New Spain. I want those men.
Pleasant raised the muzzle of his rifle an inch or so, just enough for effect.
Well, now, you ain't getting it. All you're getting is back across the river, and was I you, I'd start damn quick.
Rodriguez let his calculating gaze play over the armed men who opposed him. He passed over Michael, then came back to him, a question in his eyes. Perhaps he was puzzled by the hatred in Michael's face.
Do I know you?
Michael moved his finger away from the trigger, struggling not to shoot the man.
We met once.
I do not remember it.
Rodriguez looked back at Eli.
You are not so many as we.
I can't argue about that. Your men could whoop us in a minute, but you wouldn't live to see it. You'd be the first one dead.
Rodriguez, you have murdered many of my people. I would kill you now like a mad dog.
Rodriguez's eyes narrowed at Lucero.
I know you. There is a price on your head, Lucero.
Nicholas Galindo had trembled a little at first, awed by so many armed men. Now he was emboldened to address the soldiers on either side of Rodriguez.
Mira! Mira a este hombre antes.
Michael could only guess at what he said, but the words were impassioned, the gestures broad. He surmised that Galindo was urging them to turn against the officer and join the rebellion. Some appeared to be wavering. Rodriguez did not long tolerate the speech.
Silencio! You can't arrest them. You're off your grounds.
I have seen the sergeant's wife. A handsome woman. Think of her in prison. Turned over to the pleasure of the vilest guards I can find. Think of her swollen like a cow, giving birth on a dungeon floor to a bastard child. If she lives that long.
Damn you! Galindo went crimson. Rodriguez lost the cold smile, but not the cruelty in his eyes.
She has family. They have aided in this treason. I shall see that all of them pay.
Trembling with rage, Zaragoza tried to arise from the bench but could not remain on his feet. He sank back. Eli's and Lucero's faces had turned grim. Rodriguez gave Eli a moment's final consideration.
I do not know you, old man. But I suspect you are one of the Americano smugglers who traffics in our country. If ever I catch you there.
You never have yet.
Eli waved the muzzle of his rifle.
You gave them 10 minutes to make up their minds. I'm giving you just one.
Rodriguez turned.
Well, where are Rio?
Rodriguez and his men started toward the river. Michael lowered his rifle.
10 minutes to do what?
Eli gave Zaragoza and Galindo a look of pity.
If they don't start across the river in 10 minutes, he's going after their families back in Bar.
He wouldn't.
And like hell he wouldn't. I'm proud of you. I seen your face when you was looking at Rodriguez. I was afraid you was a-fixin' to start a war any minute. Was I you, I'd have done it.
It was all I could do to keep from shooting him right where his eyes and his nose came together.
And there'd have been dead men laying all over this place now. Most of them would have been us.
Nicholas Galindo stood before Zaragoza in dismay.
Es para mí es que él quiere.
No!
Each one of them says it's him Rodriguez really wants. Each one of them wants to go and leave the other one here.
The sergeant don't look like he can make it across the river.
And that's as far as he would get. Rodriguez would shoot him the minute he set foot back in Texas.
Galindo made a decision. He strode toward his horse, still half wet from the crossing.
Espera, Nicolás!
Zaragoza pushed to his feet, took one step, and sank back upon the bench.
Nicolás! Nicolás!
Guadalupe Lucero followed Galindo.
No! Nicolás!
It was to no avail. Galindo swung up onto his horse, took one forlorn glance at his brother-in-law, then turned the mount down toward the river. Lucero's shoulders slumped.
I tried to tell him we would trail after Rodriguez and kill him before he gets to the family. He thinks if he gives himself up, Rodriguez will be satisfied.
Zaragoza struggled to his feet again.
Please, please take me where I can see.
Michael handed his rifle to Andrew and went to the sergeant's aid. Arm around Michael's shoulder, Zaragoza managed to move to a point that gave him a view of the river. Galindo's horse was swimming. Zaragoza made the sign of the cross. Galindo's animal found solid footing and started out of the shallow water on the Texas side. Rodriguez rode out to the edge of the river to meet him. Michael saw the officer's hand come up with a pistol. Galindo buckled under the impact, grabbed wildly at the saddle, then slipped over the horse's shoulder and into the water. For a moment, his arms thrashed, then he went still. The current picked him up, and his body drifted down the river, lifeless as a broken tree limb.
Lord Jesus.
Michael felt Zaragoza stiffen in shock.
No!
On the far side, Rodriguez appeared to be having problems with his troops. He drew his sword and waved it threateningly. After a bit, one soldier split off from the group and started swimming his horse back across. Michael thought for a moment he might be deserting to the Louisiana side, but Rodriguez made no attempt to stop him. Michael raised his rifle.
No, please. This is Talamantes. He is a good boy.
The young Talamantes came out of the water and pushed his horse up the slope to the cabin. Shame was in his eyes as he approached Zaragoza. He did not dismount.
He says the soldiers didn't know Rodriguez was fixing to do that.
What could they have done if they did?
Could have shot him, is about all.
They're soldiers. They wouldn't do that.
Well, they will sooner or later when the rebellion comes.
Talamantes looked at the ground while he spoke to the sergeant, relating a message from Rodriguez.
Rodriguez todavía tomará su venganza sobre su familia.
Rodriguez sent him to tell Zaragoza that Galindo wasn't enough. He wants Zaragoza too, and right now. Otherwise, he's going after the family just like he said he would.
Zaragoza seemed drained. His gaze went to Michael.
Please, bring my horse.
Michael did not move.
You saw what happened to Galindo. You never come out of that river alive.
I have no choice. My wife. My child.
Even if you was to die, Rodriguez would go after your family just for revenge.
Michael looked to Eli and Lucero for support.
He's right. You know what Rodriguez is. Your blood won't be enough for him.
What else is there for me to do?
I tried to tell Galindo. He would not listen. All the way from Bar, Rodriguez hunted you. Now, all the way back, we can hunt Rodriguez. Somewhere, we will have our chance.
I have not the strength.
I have the strength. And more than enough dead family to give me reason. Leave Rodriguez to me.
In the determined face of Guadalupe Lucero, Michael could see that Rodriguez was as good as dead unless he killed Lucero first.
Dile a Rodriguez, Zaragoza.
Lucero told him to say Zaragoza ain't come. The soldier says Rodriguez will have to figure that out for himself. Boy says next time he goes back to Texas, it'll be to fight the Gachapinas.
Zaragoza nodded his approval of Talamantes' choice.
But now, I have no way to send an answer to Rodriguez.
Michael strode over with arms extended, offering his rifle.
This speaks all languages.
Zaragoza was unable to raise the rifle that Michael had handed him, so Michael took hold of it near the muzzle. He turned his back to Zaragoza and laid the long barrel across his own shoulder to steady it. Zaragoza took aim.
Fire!
A splash of water blossomed just short of the opposite edge, and dust puffed as the bullet skipped up the bank. A couple of the horses danced in excitement. Rodriguez fought for control of his own. Though his voice did not carry across the river, his brisk and angry movements gave testimony to his reaction. He rode up the bank and across the floodplain, his 8 remaining soldiers strung out behind him.
Pity. Didn't hit him.
I will hit him. When he is safely out of sight, I will go after him.
Michael fixed his gaze on the retreating Spanish soldiers.
Not by yourself. I'm going with you.
It ain't your fight. One mistake and you'll die over there the same way your daddy did.
Michael's eyes narrowed as he nodded toward Zaragoza.
I owe that man. And I owe Rodriguez. I don't intend to make no mistakes.
We all make mistakes. Even me.
Michael remained unmoved by Eli's arguments.
You're a full-grown man with the look of your daddy in your eyes. And I know I can't change your mind. So I'll make a mistake, too. I'll go with you.
That ain't necessary.
I ain't talking about necessary. I'm talking odds. 3 of us would have a better chance over there than 2. 4.
Michael turned fiercely on his brother.
Not you. I'll not go home and tell our mother how I went and let you get yourself killed. You stay on this side of the river. The sergeant can't take care of himself. He'll need your help.
Michael, I'm a grown man and I can help.
You're staying. And that's the last I want to hear about it.
We can't take no pack mule. Can't do no hunting over there neither, not till the job's done. You come in the cabin with me, Michael. We'll pack up a few necessaries to carry on our saddles.
Talamantes helped Zaragoza back to the bench. Zaragoza seemed shamed by his helplessness.
I should be the one to kill Rodriguez. I owe it to Nicolas.
Galindo was right about the revolution. It is coming. Even Rodriguez knows, and he is frightened of it. You can pay what you owe Galindo by staying here until you get well and can take Galindo's place.
But this is not my country.
It is a good country. And someday, when the time is right, we will go home together to our country.
Michael was of a mind to start immediately after Lieutenant Rodriguez, to get on his trail while the dust still lingered behind the Spaniards' horses. Eli Pleasant counseled caution.
And like as not, he'll post a man to hang behind and watch his back trail a while. If we was to go chasing after him like some little feisty dog after a bear, he'd turn and gobble us up. No, we need to give him time. We'll catch him napping, gobble him up.
And just how we do that?
Michael looked first at Eli, then at Lucero. Lucero gave him no answer, but he was grimly rubbing the sharp edge of a knife against the leg of his trousers. A knife with a blade as long as his hand.
Well, they outnumber us 3-1. We gotta take him by surprise and give him as little chance as we can. No chance would be better.
Michael found the thought distasteful.
You're talking about ambushing him.
Son, I got to know your daddy pretty good. I imagine he taught you about the Christian way and never hitting the other man first and all such as that. Now, I know the way he thought, but the way he thought got him killed. There ain't nothing Christian nor fair about this Rodriguez. If we treat him like there is, he'll live to see us all dead. We got to take him any way we can. By surprise, for sure, when he ain't looking. In the back, if we can. In his sleep would be best. You want him dead, don't you?
I'd want him to know what's happening to him and why. What you're talking about ain't fitting and proper.
Fitting is whatever'll get the job done and brings us all back amongst the living. When old George Washington and his boys whooped the British, they didn't always go out in the open and charge like a wild bull. They hit them redcoats in ambush and got the hell out of there. And come back and hit them another day. My old daddy was in some of that, and he told me, war ain't no Christian thing, and this is war.
We are a long way from the church.
They ate while they waited. The soldier Talamantes carefully cleaned Sergeant Zaragoza's swollen and angry arm, wrapping a fresh cloth around it. His deferential manner told Michael a great deal about his respect for the sergeant, a respect Michael assumed the other soldiers shared. It fit with his own recollection of a man who defied an officer's order and let a wounded boy live, likely at some jeopardy to himself. Michael could only hope gangrene did not develop, or Zaragoza would be buried in an alien land far from home, just as Michael's father had been. Michael kept expecting his brother to resume the argument about going along. He was surprised that Andrew kept his peace.
Learning. He's finally found out there are situations where he can't find anything funny.
Eli decided it was time to go. The three mounted their horses and started down toward the river. Eli suddenly raised his hand. A horseman was swimming across to meet them. His uniform showed he was one of Rodriguez's soldiers. Three rifles were trained on him as he brought his horse up out of the shallows, dripping water onto the dry bank. The soldier, about Michael's age, raised both hands to show he meant no harm. Eli and Lucero moved forward to meet him and took the escopeta that was the soldier's only weapon. At length, Eli turned in the saddle.
Rodriguez left him behind to stand watch like I figured. But he's loyal as Zaragoza. He deserted.
Can we trust him?
I think so. Says the whole bunch is tired of the lieutenant's abuse. They come near to mutiny when Rodriguez shot that poor Galindo out of the saddle. He hadn't had a sword and a loaded rifle, they'd have all left him and come to sanctuary.
Lucero approvingly clapped the young soldier on the shoulder and started to hand the escopeta back to him, but paused to blow the gunpowder out of the pan. Trust was one thing, caution another. The soldier took no offense.
¿Dónde está Rodriguez Bahía?
Él necesita caballos de refresco y suministros. Va directamente a bar.
He rode on up toward the cabin.
Me and Lucero, we figured Rodriguez would go to Nacogdoches first. It ain't no sight of a ride, and he needs fresh horses and supplies for the long trip south. But the boy says he's headed straight for Bar instead, probably afraid of more desertions or even a revolt. He wants to get far from this river as fast as he can. You ready?
Been ready.
Michael took a final look up toward the cabin before he edged his horse into the water. Andrew stood with the young Talamantes and the newly arrived soldier, watching. Andrew raised one hand in a silent farewell. Michael only nodded in return, then gave his attention to the river.